A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sim. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 207. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion of King of the Castle. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, King of the Castle from 1977, a slightly surreal children's series from HTV, produced for the ITV network, one of a series of many sort of successful children's shows they had. We've got 7 25-minute episodes as a young boy called Roland struggles to find his way through a bizarre fantasy world and succeed in becoming king of the castle and then find his way home.
Yes, absolutely. And he sees many of the people from his real life in sort of strange, distorted versions in this fantasy world. So getting into a bit more of the plot than we did last time, Roland lives in this this block of flats, this apartment building, where the lift, the elevator, is broken down. And when he goes up the stairs, he's encountering this gang of people. So he has this situation, and then the choir school where he goes to school, he has something of an oppressive situation there. He gets stuck in this elevator, and the lift falls, and he gets out into this strange fantasy world where he encounters all of these strange versions of people from his real life.
Yeah, that's right. It's he becomes a sort of hero quest for Roland. You know, he's the chap, he's in this world, he's given a quest, and that is to become king of the castle, to get to the top of this strange tower that he's in. And if he does so, he'll earn his way back home. And along the way, he's guided by this character, Vane, played by the marvellous Telfrin Thomas, who's done up in a sort of Bela Lugosi wig with white makeup on his face. He looks rather vampirish with his red lips and a sort of top hat and tails costume. And he pops up at various points to guide Roland and tell him what he needs to do in order to become king of the castle. And each episode he finds more obstacles in his way. He meets, as you've said, Brian, these strange and sinister versions of characters from his real life. So everybody that he's encountered turns up in some different and slightly more mysterious and nasty version in this castle that he's found himself in. So it's all a bit mysterious and, in a way, quite surreal, as we mentioned. But we have to discuss, I think, the possibility that this world he's found himself in may just be Roland's dream world. He may be in some strange nightmare for this troubled teenager who we know is trapped in a lift that's fallen, so he could presumably have been had a knock on the head. And we have to wonder, is this just fantasy, Brian?
Yeah, it's definitely the question that comes up with these types of shows and this type of fiction, for sure. We do see in Roland's bedroom glimpses of posters and images from classic horror movies and fantasy worlds. So I guess there's an influence on him. So that is something to consider, but I think it's more interesting as an actual experience than as a dream. At least that's how I see it.
Okay, so he's on his actual adventures, and each episode, we say, has another sort of difficult level to get through before he can sort of level up, I suppose.
Yes, that's right, and he has in his real life this difficult situation at school and with the bullies, as we've mentioned. He also has something of a difficult relationship with his father and with his stepmother. His father is apparently a jazz musician, mission and doesn't seem to give him a lot of time. His stepmother wants to give him time and wants to feel close to him, but feels a little disconnected. I don't think she's known him for all that long. So we get issues with that part of his life there.
Yeah, it's interesting that we've just been discussing the Fades, which again was about teenagers who have difficult relationships with their parents. Although I suppose you could say, what teenager doesn't? But yes, so he has these problems in his real life and they're mirrored by these unpleasant characters that he encounters in the fantasy world. So, yeah, it's a strange one. Whether or not, as we say, it's reality or fantasy, difficult to tell. But you can sort of interpret it either way. It's left open for us, I think, Brian.
Yes, it definitely harkens back to the genre of the young person lost in another world that we see in Alice in Wonderland and in The Wizard of Oz. It has something of that type of feel to it, for sure.
Okay. It also gave me slightly the feel of Kinvig, another show that we've talked about not too long ago, a Nigel Neal show, not his most successful one. But there we had this central character and the question as to whether or not his science fiction experiences were real or just his own sort of daydreams. But anyway, one that sort of struck me as I was watching this show.
Yes, interesting.
And of course, watching this show, we are again almost astounded by the nature of children's television in the 1970s and wondering why we keep coming back to these shows quite so often, or why we encounter so many good shows from this time period. And as so many of them seem to be from HTV, who, as we discussed in our last episode, may have been, I think, handed the children's television sort of part of the ITV network. And it was certainly something they concentrated on and specialized in.
Yes, absolutely. And they produced some classics like Time Slip and Children of the Stones. But they also produced a lot of strong shows and well-remembered shows with things like The Doombolt Chase and The Jensen Code and later Noah's Castle. And earlier in the 70s, you had things like Ace of Wands, and then that was replaced by The Tomorrow People. So you had some big shows, some well-remembered and well-known shows, some that we think of more as classics, and a number of serials like The Doombolt Chase and The Jensen Code that were just solid shows that came up one by one as interesting little pieces from that period of time. And I think King of the Castle is one of them.
Yes, as you say, they've certainly got, you know, this reputation for producing very solid children's television in the 70s. As we discussed last time, we perhaps found out part of the reason for HTV's success, which was that they'd funded a very successful junior drama workshop in Bristol, which was covered by their which was in their region. So that might be where they got all the talent to produce these shows, or at least their child actors. And they've produced many interesting series.
Yes, absolutely. And I think British children's television in the 1970s could be darker and more serious and more complex and more scary as well than almost any other children's TV from other time periods or from other countries. And you had it in many of these shows that we mentioned, like Children of the Stones. And sort of at the tail end of that, in about 1980, we had Noah's Castle. So you had some pretty intense things. And on the BBC side of things, you had shows like The Changes. So you had some really interesting and hard-hitting stuff being done for children at that time, and that was really neat to see.
Dare we suggest that it was because life in Britain in the 1970s was also dark, serious, and complex? Possibly, Brian.
Well, maybe so. It's hard to say.
We have touched upon that before when we talked about Noah's Castle. But yes, it might reflect British society at the time, the changes. And of course, when we talked about the great adult show Survivors, another epic show from the 70s on British TV.
Yes, and things like Doomwatch as well. You did see a lot of societal things reflected in some of those shows being things that showed a lot of concern.
Yes, of course. How could I forget Doomwatch, where we were all going to hell in a handcart? Yes, that was complex, dark, and intense.
Absolutely. So we should get a bit more into some of our own thoughts and feelings about King of the Castle.
Yes, we should. It's time to talk about our own sort of complex feelings about this particular show. So, Brian, I'm going to throw it to you to start with this time. What did you find particularly appealing about this show? What was good?
Well, I like the concept of doing a sort of Wizard of Oz style show of the young character, a boy instead of a girl in this case, being thrown into this strange world where there is a quest and he has to do some things and gain some experience and maturity through the process before finally getting home back to normal life. So I love the conceit of doing that.
Yes, it's an interesting setup and nicely done, I suppose, by the Bristol Boys, Bob Baker and Dave Martin. So yes, it's nicely done, perhaps more comprehensible and understandable a plot than their rather bizarre show Sky, which we talked about not too long ago. So yeah, I do like the sort of setup of it, and you know, an adventure or a hero quest in a fantasy world is always appealing, particularly for a children's audience. And as you say, we have to mention the obvious parallels with Oz and with Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. As we said last time, there's even a moment when Roland is shrunken in size, which is very Alice, I suppose, isn't it, Brian?
Yes, absolutely. And you have guide characters. You have a number of references there. I also have to mention the cast in this, with all of those dual performances. This has a lot of strong performances. I really enjoyed seeing Talfrin Thomas and Fulton McKay and Milton Johns and all of these different actors doing the two variations of a character, and I thought that they were very well done, and I really enjoyed the performances of this.
Yes, the adult actors are all particularly good, and even if you don't recognise the names, when you see them, you'll probably recognise their faces from 60s, 70s and 80s British TV. And in particular, as you say, Talfrin Thomas from Survivors, but from so much other television of the time. The well-known Talf the Teeth, as he was sometimes referred to. And he's great here, clearly having quite a lot of fun playing the miserable caretaker in the block of flats. And then this strange guide character, Vane, who leads Roland through the many levels of the castle.
Yeah, a lot of the time Talfrin Thomas would be left playing the sort of stereotypical miserable Welshman. And in this case, it was so nice to see him doing this strange, surreal character of Vane and, putting a lot into that and really bringing a lot to the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Having a fine time. And it's great to watch him.
So what did you think of the lead character of Roland and the performance there?
Well, I have to say, having admired the adult actors' performances, that I did struggle a bit more with the kids in this one. And, you know, with Philip DaCosta as Roland, they do all slightly have that junior drama workshop feel to them. And none of them seem to be entirely natural actors, except possibly Jamie Foreman, who plays the bully Ripper and then went on, you know, to have a successful career and still, you know, still is quite prominent in British film and TV. So I found the child actors a bit more tricky in this one. They're not quite as good as some of the performances we've seen in things like Time Slip and Children of the Stones. What did you feel about the junior actors?
I think that's fair. The child actors, other than Philip DaCosta, I thought were okay. You know, they were in small enough roles that what they were doing was sort of good enough, I felt. Philip DaCosta was okay. He had some moments that worked well, but, you know, he was carrying a lot of this show, which is pretty challenging for someone that young. And I thought he did okay with it. It was not great, and certainly not as strong as the adult actors were in this, but I thought he was okay.
Okay. What did you think of his singing?
or whomever it was singing there, it was very good.
Yes, assuming that is him singing in the choir moments.
I don't think it was, but it was the right kind of voice for someone who would be in a choir school like that. It was that was handled perfectly well, I think.
Okay. So were there any other particular parts of this show that stuck out for you for either the right or the wrong reasons, Brian?
Well, one thing that I have to mention is this reference they put in there that I guess sort of runs through it, but they actually quote it at one point, which is the line of poetry, "Child Roland to the Dark Tower came," which was originally from King Lear, I believe, but it's known as the first line in the title of a poem by Robert Browning. It's a classic poem that has been used as the basis for many different shows and has influenced many different shows. Terence Dix used it for The Five Doctors. I understand Stephen King used it and referenced it in his Dark Tower series. Well, with a child called Roland, and there is a tower both in real life and something like a tower in the fantasy world as well, and in fact they do quote that line, it's definitely something that they're riffing on here. And that was something that I really quite liked and was an interesting sort of poetry and literature reference to bring into it.
That's a very good catch, and one that went completely over my head, I'm afraid, Brian. I missed that one.
Well, I didn't catch it until they actually quoted the line.
Right.
But it's no coincidence that the main character is called Roland. That's definitely a reference there.
I'm giving away my ignorance of classic poetry, I'm afraid.
Definitely a lot of interesting things in this one. They packed the references and the Frankenstein references we mentioned. They really packed in the references and the little social commentaries and the interesting parallel roles between the real and more fantastic worlds in this. And those were things that I really enjoyed in this serial.
Yes, I mean, I like yourself, I picked up on the Frankenstein references, obviously. Alice's Adventures in Wonderland is a good parallel as well. And as you say, there's a sort of Oz-like feel to it. Again, you know, two sort of classic bits of literature where children may be dreaming or may be in these strange new worlds. Who knows? So, yeah, some good stuff there.
As soon as you see, you know, the actors playing a character in, you know, different versions of a character in the real world and the fantasy world, Wizard of Oz comes to mind.
Yes. Absolutely. And as we said, the actors doing it do a very good job in their sort of, I think they have more fun in their fantasy roles than they do in their real life roles. It certainly gives them much more to work with.
Absolutely.
It's 7 episodes long. I thought it was getting to the end of its story around about episode 5 or 6. And I did wonder whether episode 6 itself was just a bit of padding that they threw in to delay the end of the story, but apart from that, it runs along pretty well, I think, Brian.
Yes, I think it is a little long in some ways, but I like the fact that they spent a fair bit of time at the beginning, in fact, a whole episode dedicated to showing what Roland's real life was like. And then they spend a lot of time at the end sort of dealing with the impact of some of these things. So while I agree it was a little long, it was nice to have some of that time at the beginning and the end in there.
Okay. Where would you place it in the sort of ranking of these great 70s shows that we keep coming back to, Brian? Is it up there with something like Children of the Stones and Time Slip for you?
No, I don't think it is. And part of the reason that it isn't is that Philip DaCosta in the main role is okay, but he isn't good enough to bring it up to that level, I think.
Right.
I think it fits in as a pretty solid, interesting show of its time that is definitely an artifact of its time and doesn't stand up as a sort of timeless piece quite as well as some of the others do. But it's a solid show and it's an interesting one.
Okay. Interesting one for us to discuss here, as we often come back to these 70s shows on British Invaders. And I should also mention that I put out a call this afternoon on Facebook for some last-minute comments or reviews. And as ever, we're very grateful to Gordon for contributing, who tells us that he saw King of the Castle on a crummy videotape and was pleased to see it was a surreal and Kafkaesque, we haven't mentioned that reference, and as mad as he'd remembered, with a magnificent cast and a rather good story about what you might want might not always be what you need. So there's another interpretation and another reference that I didn't spot, Kafka.
Yes. So, we should get to our recommendations. What do you have to say on this one, Eamon?
Okay, I'll go first again, shall I? I struggled with King of the Castle, I'm afraid, Brian, and I would put it quite low down in that list of kids' shows from the 70s we've talked about. It's certainly, as we've said, it's no Children of the Stones, but then again, what is? If we've teased your interest, then it might be worth the outlay of £8 on Amazon. You can find a few clips on YouTube to give you a sort of flavour of what it's like. But I wouldn't put it very high up from me. It's a sort of very sort of thumb in the middle, I think, from myself. What about you, Brian?
Okay, I'm a little more positive on this one. It is definitely a piece of its time. So you have to expect it to be a little slow in the pacing compared to modern things and compared to many other shows. And the visuals are the type of things that they did in shows like this at the time. It's not top of the line or modern visual effects. It has a bit of a basic look to it. But if you are interested in things that do have that sort of pacing and visuals that fit with that era, this is quite an interesting show for the parallel roles, for the references, for all the little commentaries and all the little bits of things that go on throughout it. So I'll give a cautious recommendation that if you do appreciate things from that era and are willing to watch things that are a little slower in the pacing and have those types of visuals, then yeah, I would say it would be worth checking out. So a cautious recommendation from me.
Okay, but as ever, we'd like to hear from you yourselves as to what you thought about this show. Do you remember it? Have you watched it more recently? Or will you go on to watch it as a result of our reviews? Whatever, please do get in touch. Come and join us on the Facebook group or find us on our website.
Yes, absolutely. It would be lovely to have a bit more of a discussion about this one in either of those places. So, in summary, King of the Castle introduced us to Roland, who was this schoolboy in a choir school who was struggling with a tough time at school and a tough time with bullies in the flat where he lives and struggling with the relationship with his parents. And he ends up trapped in this lift and gets shunted into this strange, surreal world where he meets all kinds of different versions of the people that he knows, who we've met. And we end up with this sort of quest story where he has to do a variety of things and meet a variety of villains and friends and make his way to the top of the tower, where he will escape to the real world and back to his life.
Interesting stuff. And, you know, as ever, come and join us at our very own castle on Facebook and tell us what you think.
Yes, please do.
And of course, come back next time when we are sticking with ITV. We're going back to the very early 1960s, a black and white show, a children's show. In fact, two shows from the team behind the earlier Pathfinders to Space series, which we've talked about. This time we're looking at City Beneath the Sea and its sequel, Secret Beneath the Sea.
That's right. So it should be fun getting back to some of that early material once again. You can reach us at BritishInvaders.com, and we have a Facebook group. So if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find us there.
You'll also find us at VogNetwork.com, which is the Voice of Geeks Network. Lots of geek-related podcast shows going out there, including British Invaders on a Monday and a Tuesday, but you may find several other shows that you'll be interested in, and you can come and join in the participatory nature of the network, where there are chats and other bits and pieces for the community to join in.
Yes, good stuff there for sure. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, as ever, thank you for being with us. And until next time, it's Eamon in England, trapped in a castle, caught in a landslide, no escape from reality.